up the best tasting show on radio and inviting you to join me at the kitchen table for another hour of great adventures in food. Each week, travel with us from the back roads of Louisiana to the streets of Europe's capitals as we delve into food. We talk to chefs, food historians, authors, and producers. We ferret out the current trends, revive forgotten traditions, and of course, we even cook some of those important recipes. That's Stirring It Up next, but first the news.
Washington, I'm Louise Schiavone. The U.S. is asking authorities in Hong Kong to extradite Edward Snowden, the former contractor to the National Security Agency who revealed surveillance programs to media outlets. Charges were filed against Snowden Friday. One official said if Hong Kong doesn't act soon, it will, quote, complicate bilateral relations. Secretary of State John Kerry told foreign ministers meeting in Doha this weekend that the sheer survival of Syria is now in question due to the extended civil war there.
A continued conflict could lead to the total disintegration of the state of Syria. A continued conflict could lead to even greater sectarian violence, which serves nobody.
Kerry met with ministers from 10 other countries in Qatar today. The group is called Friends of Syria, all of the nations supporting armed rebels opposing the regime of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. The U.S. is pledging another $300 million in humanitarian aid to the Syrian opposition. And as NPR's Deborah Amos reports, the White House says it is expanding military support for a key U.S. ally on Syria's border.
Patriot missile defense systems and a squadron of F-16 fighter jets are also part of the package for Jordan, as concerns grow over the spillover from Syria's civil war. A joint U.S.-Jordanian military exercise ended this week, and U.S. troops who were here for the training mission will stay behind to provide security, according to the White House announcement, without clarifying their role. Jordan is on the front lines of the conflict in Syria. More than 500,000 refugees are sheltered in the country. Rebels have confirmed to NPR that Jordan also hosts a covert military training program overseen by Western intelligence agencies. Deborah Amos, NPR News, Amman.
George Zimmerman's defense team has scored a pretrial victory. The judge in the murder trial has ruled that the prosecution may not call audio experts to comment on 911 calls heard moments before the death of Trayvon Martin. One defense expert argued there was not enough audio to determine who the screams on the tapes are coming from. An $80 million Texas A&M University equestrian complex under construction collapsed today when the barn frame came down. Four workers were injured, three critically. Cause of the collapse is not known. The Vectren Air Show near Dayton, Ohio, has been canceled after a gruesome accident. A plane carrying a stunt woman poised to walk on the wing of the aircraft tilted midair, flipped, and crashed to the ground, erupting in a ball of fire. The pilot and wing walker died. No spectators were injured. This is NPR. In Haley, Idaho today, hundreds of motorcyclists joined in a rally in support of prisoner of war Bo Bergdahl, held captive by the Taliban since June of 2009. Bergdahl's now 27 years old. He was serving with an Alaska-based infantry unit when he vanished from his base in southern Afghanistan and was taken captive. The rally came as U.S. officials prepared to open peace talks with the Taliban, who've asked for the release of five detainees at Guantanamo Bay in exchange for Bergdahl. Flooding has begun to recede in Calgary, Alberta, following extensive devastation there. At least three people died. As Megan Grant tells us, tens of thousands were forced from their homes in the worst natural disaster ever in that Canadian province.
The two rivers that run through Calgary, the Canadian epicenter of the oil and gas industry, are finally receding. The Bow and Elbow rivers poured over their banks into neighborhoods, forcing about 75,000 people from their homes. Downtown Calgary is also evacuated. Officials shut down power to avoid damage to a transformer. Other parts of the province remain in crisis. To the west, floodwaters threaten to breach a newly built berm. And to the east, in the city of Medicine Hat, about 10,000 people are headed for higher ground. For NPR News, I'm Megan Grant in Redwood Meadows, Alberta.
One person is dead, at least two have been injured in heavy weather in Sioux Falls, South Dakota. A 63-year-old woman taking shelter in the bathtub of her mobile home was killed when a storm lifted her home, slammed it to the ground. Her husband was injured. I'm Louise Schiavone, NPR News, Washington.
Support for NPR comes from the John S. and James L. Knight Foundation, helping NPR advance journalistic excellence in the digital age.
For the finest in classic ska, rock steady, rockers, DJ, dance hall, and dub, it's Jamon. Cecil here, bringing you Southwest Louisiana's longest-running reggae tradition, Jamon. Jamon, Sunday nights from 9 to 11 p.m., or Saturday mornings from 1 to 3 a.m., and streaming live anytime at krvs.org.
Chef John Falls welcoming you to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. From the swamps and bayous of South Louisiana, thanks for joining us in our little piece of culinary heaven where good cooking is just a way of life. Mornings begin here with a roux simmering in a cast iron pot, and our evenings end with thoughts of what we're going to cook tomorrow. Welcome. Welcome to Starting It Up. It's so nice to have all of you around the kitchen table with us today. And I'm just so happy that you chose us in your busy life to spend an hour or so just talking about things we love, especially good food.
Especially great
food. Yes. At the kitchen table right now with us, of course, Michelle Yark, our executive producer. How are you doing, Michelle?
Very well, thank you.
Doing good.
Mm-hmm.
And then trying to get through the glass wall to the sandwiches, of course. Did Slam, our engineer, sitting there. How's things going?
Things are great.
Anyway, again, y'all, so nice to have you with us. And I don't know if you have a subscription, Michelle, to a Savoir magazine. Do you have?
For years now.
So in other words, everybody has Savoir magazine.
Do you have a subscription?
I'll probably pay for all of y'all's subscriptions.
You do not pay for mine, but if you would like to...
I have my own subscription. In fact, just to make sure I get it here at the studio, and I get it at home. Savour is one of our favorite food magazines. There's great ones out there that we subscribe to, but Savour always has these interesting regional stories, right? I mean, that's what makes Savour really different, is they dig deep to find the gems of food, whether it's international, local, regional, it doesn't matter, right?
That's right. It's not just... a couple of paragraphs about a topic. It's not just a gloss over it. It's truly an in-depth look, whether they're talking about markets or sandwiches.
Oh, sandwiches. That's exactly right. Well, talking about sandwiches, I bet you remember, I think it was the month of, it might have been May, but I think April or so, because I held on to that magazine for a while. I think it was the April issue, that they highlighted the whole magazine to something that truly is one of my loves, and that is sandwiches.
Mm-hmm.
Sandwiches. You know, you think of sandwiches as just a simple something that you get when you have nothing else. I'll make a sandwich.
Yeah.
What do you feel like eating tonight? I think I'll get an egg salad sandwich.
You know, and we kind of don't honor the sandwich. We don't give it its due because it is kind of ordinary and you just slap something together, you do it fast. We don't really pay the homage to a sandwich
should. And the sad part about it is that just about every city, every town, every country is known for some great sandwich that you're going
to
get only there. In fact, you might not know that Philly is normally referred to as Sandwich City.
Sandwich City.
Philadelphia, absolutely. Sandwich City, and I, whenever I'm in Philadelphia, or even Pittsburgh for that reason, and I think it's because, you know what? I think so many Italians, so many meat markets, the old iron workers, I mean, you know, they needed that big, hefty piece of bread and meat to go with those Boilermaker shots of beer and whiskey that they did after the shifts. You know. So I think Philly probably had a great reputation for sandwiches. Of course, New Orleans is a city all its own. I couldn't help but reflect on all of the wonderful sandwiches, hot and cold, that I've eaten in my life. And, of course, many of them right here in Louisiana. Think of the muffalata, you know.
One of my very favorite sandwiches.
I know, hot or cold. Hot or cold, absolutely. In 1906, it was Lupo Salvatore, a Sicilian immigrant and owner of the very famous, now world-famous, Central Grocery Store right there on Decatur. You can't walk by it without going in.
Oh, I love that store.
Right there on Decatur, across from the French Market, you know, across from that. They began combining ham and salami and cheese and olive salad, which is a brand all its own of carrots and all different kinds of stuff, and a nice olive oil and vinegar base, and bread that was purchased by the workers of the community and brought into one large sandwich that was wrapped in paper and easy to transport, and of course could be divided and shared because it was so big if you wanted to, I mean.
Yeah, you didn't have to share it, even today.
But y'all, I guess the rest is history. But you know, before I get ahead of myself in the story, sandwiches, where did they come from anyway, and why that name? Well, some people define the sandwich, you know, as two slices of bread, usually buttered, with a filling of meat, cheese, vegetables. Today, you know,
description.
Doesn't have to begin or end with anything. You know, it's just a definition that makes it real easy. And of course, you can put whatever fillings you want on. Right off the top of my head, I have a few favorite sandwiches.
I'm shocked.
The BLT, you know, one of my all-time favorites. I love a good BLT, especially when I can think of nothing else to eat. BLT kind of comes up to the top because it's all about comfort. It's all about bacon, lettuce, and fresh tomatoes, especially in season.
There's nothing like a BLT with fresh Creole tomatoes.
Nothing. Of course, except grilled cheese that's thrown with the right cheese. The muffalata, of course, the Monte Cristo, which most people think of as an upscale sandwich wearing a tuxedo. Pastrami on rye and hoagies and, back to Philadelphia, the cheese steak. One of my favorite, the Dagwood. You know what a Dagwood is?
Yeah.
A Dagwood is clean the refrigerator.
Mile high.
I love a good Dagwood. And then, of course, there's just the ham and cheese. And when I was over in Asia, one of my favorite was the latte. And the latte was an Asian sandwich that was made with ice cream, 4 or 5 scoops of ice cream on top of a piece of bread that was baked and colored in multicolors. It was a child's sandwich. It was an ice cream sandwich.
Oh.
The latte. And they had like 4 different kinds of ice cream. It's kind of like what you would think of a banana split without the banana and nuts and whipped cream, but just on a colored bread.
Mm-hmm.
What about lobster rolls? What about one of my favorite when I was working in the boilers at St. James Sugar Co-op during my summer job, the sardine sandwich, just right out the can with the olive oil all over your hand, and you smell like sardines all day, and everybody knew you had a good lunch.
Everybody knew whether they wanted to or not.
Don't even go there. What about the Schmitter? You ever heard of Schmitter? Schmitter, one of my favorite sandwiches.
I don't believe I've ever eaten a Schmitter.
Well, it's named after a Philadelphia beer. Absolutely. It's a great sandwich. It's steak and cheese and fried onion rings pile high on it. Grill salami on top of that. And then you squeeze a whole bunch of Thousand Island dressing on top of that. That's the Schmitter. And you have to have a Schmitter beer to go with it. Y'all, I could go on and on. I won't even mention the hamburger and the numerous varieties I have of it.
Mm-hmm.
But how's it named anyway? A lot of people in the fourth Earl of Sandwich, John Montagu, is credited, I guess, with creating the sandwich because he didn't want to leave a gambling table one night. And I don't know if this story is true or not. Montagu had made a number of visits to the Eastern Mediterranean while in Greece and Turkey. He saw pita bread just filled with all different kinds kind of things. And he recognized that there was a value to that kind of food. And I guess on his particular night, he decided to slice a piece of prime rib or something and put it between two pieces of bread and made a very easy and popular food that became a sandwich. So a lot of people think they're all a sandwich. Created a sandwich. In fact, the idea of the sandwich goes back much, much earlier than that. The first recorded sandwich was the Hillel sandwich, named after the first century rabbi Hillel the Elder, and that was a mixture of chopped nuts and apples and spices and wine to dip in. That was the sauce. Eaten between two pieces of matzah. And it was eaten with bitter herbs during a Passover meal. And throughout the Middle Ages, we have records of our open-faced sandwiches with thick blocks of coarse, stale bread called trenchers that were used as plates, and other foods were eaten on top of that trencher with the fingers. And, of course, the trencher would soak up all the juices of the meat. And, well, like again, prime rib with an au jus would go on top of that. That's where the French dip came from, and got it real wet by wetting the bread and the juices. And then you just pile up anything you want on top of it. Often, of course, the trencher itself was eaten, and then that became more of the sandwich. In the 16th and 17th century, there's a number of references to what must have been sandwiches in the writing of Shakespeare. Thomas Haygood and George Peel each write about bread and meat, bread and cheese, and a peddler called the Bread and Meat Man, they write about. So, well, it had to be a sandwich. Introduced to America by the English woman Elizabeth Leslie in her 1840 cookbook, Directions for Cookery, Leslie gives her recipe for what else? A good ham sandwich. But it really wasn't until 1928, y'all, with the ability to buy sliced loaves of bread in a bakery and grocery, that the sandwiches really became a popular food for the working crowd at lunch. And today, y'all, that's what we want to talk about. We want to talk about sandwiches. We want to talk about some of our favorite sandwiches. We certainly have a great guest. Michelle, I'm sure you're going to give us some tidbits of interest about a sandwich, right?
Well, you know, it just so happens, looking through my issue of Savour.
Oh, you're interested. Right.
Yeah. The Reuben.
Yeah.
Do you ever think about who is Reuben?
Well, it had to be named after the guy Reuben up in New York.
Well, there's still some controversy over it.
Well, of course there is.
There's always controversy over good food.
The muffalata was originally called the false, and now it's, but anyway,
right. The Reuben. There's debate over whether Reuben Kulafowski, a grocer from Omaha, created the Reuben, or Arnold Reuben, who actually had a restaurant in New Orleans in the early 1900s. Arnold Reuben, I thought this was really interesting. In his restaurant, he was known for creating honorific sandwiches.
Honorific.
Honorific.
That's it.
So there was the Al Jolson, which consisted of raw meat, raw egg, chopped onion. There was the Frank Sinatra, cream cheese, barley duke, currant jelly, tongue, sweet pickle, and Milton Berle, cream cheese, turkey, and barley duke. Apparently, it was very popular. It was the posh thing at the time. It was very much in vogue.
Well, y'all, there's always debate about where the sandwich came from, but one thing for sure, we all love them, and we're going to talk about them today.
A hot dog, I shouldn't ask, maybe, 'cause I don't know any animal that grows cylindrically. So have a hot dog on me, my friend. It's made out of animal odds and ends. Have a hot dog on me, my friend. It's the particle board of meat. It's good to reuse and recycle the unpopular pieces of meat that are quite gross, yet after they're processed are such a delicious treat that the children eat them till they're queasy because they love the taste of
sodium phosphate and erythorbate, soy protein and sodium nitrate. So have a hot dog on me, my...
Greetings, I'm Jake Hebert.
And I'm Adam Chouard. Join us every Friday at midnight for the Sound Club radio program.
Your home for left field pop gems from today to yesteryear.
Here on 88.7 FM KRVS.
Hi, I'm Pete Bergeron. If your day starts early, like mine does, let's spend it together with Cajun music from 5 to 7 a.m. here at Public Radio for Acadiana, KRVS, 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles.
You were only 8 years old, eyes of blue and hair of gold. I was the only new kid in the school. I sat there all alone until you came along. You gave me a wink and a ham sandwich. And with every bite I took, all I had to do was look to see your eyes of love look back at me. And with each and every bite, I knew we'd always share our lives. And all we need is our love and a ham sandwich.
Play it now. Oh, yeah.
Oh, I never will forget the beautiful sunset.
Welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up, the best tasting show on radio. And today, of course, we're talking about one of my favorite subjects, sandwiches. And Michelle, I forgot to mention that we had two specialty sandwiches at the Falls House. We had the Vienna sausage.
Vienna sausage.
Okay. Folded over in white bread with mayonnaise.
Uh-huh.
And then we had cream of Vienna sausage. Cream of Vienna. That was potted meat.
Potted meat.
That's when company came. We had the cream. A Vienna sausage. It was really wonderful. We used to love to do that. Oh, was it good. Anyway, y'all, today again we're talking about sandwiches, and there's no question about it that here in Louisiana we have, you know, between the muffalot and the po' boy, I mean, there's no argument. And it was in 1929 when the Streetcar Union Division 194 went on strike that it all happened. The strike lasted for several months, and the striking workers had very little money to survive on. So two brothers, Benny and Clovis Martin, who themselves were former streetcar operators, were the owners of Martin Brothers Restaurant. They decided to help their friends on the picket line, so they fed them sandwiches made of 1 pound loaves of French bread, cut into three, and filled with a mixture of sliced ham and cheese and lettuce and tomatoes and pickles and mayonnaise. These sandwiches were fed to all of the men free of charge. As the men came into the restaurant, they would say, "Here comes another one of those poor boys." And so the po' boy became a part of New Orleans cuisine. And Michelle, we have a guy with us today who is absolutely one of our best friends when it comes to a great sandwich, right?
Yes, indeed. We're so very lucky to have with us really a good friend, Don Rodasta. Don and his brothers, Wayne and Mark, own Rodasta's Restaurant, Deli and Catering on Iris Avenue in New Orleans.
Absolutely one of the best, mm-hmm. if not the best po' boy place in town.
Well, you know, if we just go ahead and open ourselves to confession right here. You know, remember a couple of years ago,
We went on a quest to find the best roast beef po' boy in the world, remember?
We did, and we started at Rodasta's, and we could have stopped right there.
We could have stopped right there.
We ate so much, we should have stopped right there. But we kept going. But yes, absolutely the best roast beef po' boy that day. So, Don, welcome to Stirring It Up. It's so great to have
Hello,
you on the show.
Guys. How y'all doing?
We're good.
Don, we miss you. How you doing?
Don making me laugh We are doing fabulous. How y'all doing?
Good, good, good. Well, you know what we just said? We just told all of our listeners just now that there's no doubt about it. When we think of roast beef po' boys, now, of course, you have all of the great po' boys, but when you talk about a roast beef po' boy, they can stop right there at your shop.
If I remember that day, I was your first stop.
That's right. You were my first stop, and I went to about seven of them that day, and let me tell you, after...
You ate, and you said you had a bunch more stops to go.
That's right. And at 4 o'clock that afternoon when we were heading back toward the airport, Michelle and I looked at each other with pain in our face, and we said, we should have just stopped at the first one.
So, how's everything going, okay?
Everything's going good. How's business with you all over there? Everything's going well?
Being summertime, we are very busy. Very lucky.
That is good. That's a blessing.
We are very blessed.
Well, y'all, and you deserve it. Y'all have a fabulous place. It's a lot of fun to be in there. I mean, y'all, and first of all, just the hospitality that y'all show your customers when you walk
and
in.
And the entertainment.
Just and the entertainment. These guys are great.
Well, tell us about the family business, because y'all have been in business for, what, about 36 years now?
We've been on Aris in Old Mary, June 1st, 1975, but we grew up in a grocery business. My grandma had a grocery on Olive and Eagle off of South Calton behind the old Cleveland Dairy.
Mm-hmm.
My daddy had a store on Calton and Claiborne across from Palmer Park for 27 years. And we grew up very fortunate, I want to say. We grew up in the best family business in the world. We was delivering groceries on the big bicycles with the big baskets. We was my oldest brother, Jerry, Wayne, and we just grew up in a great business.
Y'all absolutely did. Now, the Rodosta family, where did your family originate?
My family came from Palermo.
From Palermo.
Yeah.
Now, whenever I ask the Italians, the Sicilians in New Orleans where they came from, they always say we came from Palermo because the port was there. That was the city you grew up in?
My grandpa and his brother, Uncle Jerome, they both came over from Palermo at the same time.
Mm-hmm. Now, y'all were in the grocery business to begin with. What drove y'all into the sandwich business?
Oh, let me tell you this. We grew up in the grocery business. We had the finest clientele in New Orleans you can imagine. As years went by, 30 years went by, 40 years went by, all our beautiful clientele started to die off, and you couldn't replace those people. You couldn't replace that kind of clientele. And one year went by, we threw out all the groceries. And another year went by, we threw out another aisle of groceries. So we used to just do hot roast beef and just, cold cut sandwiches, ham and cheese, turkey, luncheon meat, olive loaf, salami. And then we just built the kitchen, I guess about, 15, 18 years ago, maybe a little longer. And that's how we got started.
Don, was that in the same location that you're in right now?
Yes.
Right there on the corner.
It was a full-fledged grocery store there for about, 18 years.
Well, y'all have, for our listeners, I visualize the store sitting right there on that street, and it looks like exactly what you would think an all-Italian grocery store would look like. Now, Don, one of the things that's always impressed me about the Italian or the Sicilian community, I should say, in New Orleans is the unbelievable family work ethic. The whole family comes together to work, and I think... I'm not sure, but did I meet your mom when I was in that life?
My mom was there. Let me tell y'all, and you know this, Italian families are close-knit. If it wasn't my mom, my brother Wayne, my brother Mark, we've been working together 30-something years. How many people can say that they did that?
No, that's exactly right. It's hard enough to live next to your cousin, let alone work 30 years with the whole family.
Shoot, or have 30 minutes on Christmas.
So many family members, it's a family feud. They can't work together.
You can see the fun y'all have. It's a hard business. It's a tough business. But you know what? The thing I love about Rodosta's is that y'all really know how to make the whole environment a lot of fun, and you engage the customer, and the customer feels good about being there. It's really great.
Look, my wife, Joan, I don't know if you met Joan.
Yeah, I met Joan.
I couldn't make it without Joan. Look, she knows every single person's name, their kids' names, who walks through the door. Oh, hello, Joe. Hello, Susan. I said, Joan, who's that? Who's that? I'm always in the kitchen. Joan, who's that? I got to go tell him hello. She's incredible. I don't know how she does it. But Joan's funny. Joan is fun too, boy.
Well, we were saying that when we went into your place, we had the roast beef po' boy. But share with us all the varieties that you have, because you have quite a selection.
Let me tell you. Our number one seller by a mile is roast beef. Always was.
It is. It's number one, period. Forget the mile.
Yeah, you know, we have customers that go out, try other places, and I love competition. They go to other places, try them out. They say, no comparison. They come right back. But we got over 40 kinds of pull bars.
40 pull bars?
Oh, we got more than 40. But here's a few. Well, you know, roast beef. The number two seller is a beautiful fried shrimp.
Oh, yeah. Wow.
Number four is, but I came up with a new one about a year ago. I call it the Cajun Delight.
That sounds good. What's all
well,
that?
I just dream up. It's crawfish patties on a pull bar, four crawfish patties, fried green tomatoes, homemade remoulade sauce, romaine lettuce, and green onions.
Man, you should have called that the John Falls.
Well, I should have. We have so many kinds. We got the Grand Slam. We got the Angela Special. The Jones Special. That's a big seller. The grilled shrimp sauteed in butter, herbs, spice, and white wine. Mm. That's probably number five bestseller.
Oh, my gosh.
But people just don't know what to get. But most people get the same exact thing.
Now, you know, that's very interesting that people come in with all the varieties you have. But you know what? I know that because y'all invited me into the kitchen, you know, being a cook. Y'all were very generous to allow me to come into the kitchen. And when
you were going back whether they invited you or not.
I was going to be asked to be invited. I wasn't going to just take over, Michelle. But you know what? When you opened up that big pot of roast beef sitting there waiting to go, and lunch hadn't started yet.
Yes, he was early that day.
We were early.
It was the most unbelievable thing to see the preparation before the storm, because y'all were going to get hit with the biggest lunch business, but yet y'all were generous to let me come back there and see it. And Michelle, remember I said the French bread is piled to the ceiling, remember?
Yeah.
Wayne's the sole roast beef maker. Wayne's been doing that for 30 years. My brother Wayne.
Right.
He does the roast beef solo. Nobody else touches roast beef but him.
No use messing with perfection.
What about the bread? Same bread,
We use La Louisiana from Kent.
Well, you have great bread, too. Wow, you have great.
Original French bakers from France.
Mm.
But we used to use, I'm not cutting them short, Alois Bendis.
Oh, yeah.
Mr. Bendis is a very nice guy, but when Katrina put him out of business for almost a year, I think, we had to find another baker, and La Louisiana is doing us a hell of a job.
Well, La Louisiana, that's a good company. No, and now let me ask you something. When I think of the roast beef, I mean, I could eat a plate of roast beef by itself.
Exactly.
But is the po' boy about the bread or is it about the meat?
I think both.
See that? I almost stumped.
Most customers are so picky about the bread, but the ingredients is more important, I think.
I think what you said, both are very important, but
it's a 50-50 situation, if you ask me.
Yeah, right, right.
Because most people like Leidenheimer's bread. Most people like Jindisa's bread. Some people swear by Leidenheimer.
Right.
Everybody's got their own preference, but I'm very happy with La Louisiana.
Now, look, do y'all make a lot of your own sauces or stuff that go on the bread? I know the ketchup and mayonnaise and stuff like that, but do you make a lot of your own stuff in-house as well that dress the breads?
Every single thing on these pull bars is homemade.
See
from
that?
The Italian sausage, the hot sausage, the meatballs, the tuna salad, the egg salad, chicken salad.
And y'all stuff?
Remoulade sauce. We make red gravies. We make roast beef gravy. We make... Nothing comes out of the jar, I promise you.
I know that you can. Look, the proof is always in the pudding.
Now, during the summer, don't laugh at this. During the summer, you can't give away soup. During the winter, we make three or four different soups a week. Now, Wayne helps me with the soup, so I help Wayne. Wayne comes up with all these soup recipes at the dive bar. He's got about 300 cookbooks. We made some fantastic soups. Past winter, but gumbo sells every day, but not like winter, but gumbo is awesome. The soups in the winter, we can't keep soup. We make definitely three kinds every single week, or four, sometimes five kinds, sometimes one a day. But that's in the wintertime.
Well, it's interesting that the number one pull bar that y'all sell is the roast beef, not because I have a doubt that it's so flavorful, but when you think of pull bars in New Orleans, and if you just ask somebody on the street, tell me a New Orleans pull bar, the first thing I think they're going to say is an oyster pull bar, oyster loaf.
I think that was 20, 30 years ago.
I see.
If you ask me, anybody comes in town. It's a roast beef, having shrimp and oyster second and third.
Now, Don, does anybody ever do what we did, come in doing a little, we weren't doing a test, we were just trying to figure out for our radio show or for our television or writing a book or whatever, where we would go to find the real icons of pole bars. And, of course, y'all were our first stop. But do y'all ever get people in, as you say, that come around just testing one to another and then find their favorite?
We had a couple people came in a few months ago, was testing pole bars. They didn't want to give it up much information. You know, I didn't ask, but I tried to help them the best I can. Like, one time I made them a big old shrimp pole bar, you know, in the house, and they tasted it. Then we go and sample some other restaurants, and I said, okay. And I never heard from them, you know, they never came back. But
well, I can guarantee you one thing, it wasn't because of the sandwich.
Can I tell you this little story?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Our customers, they grew up in grammar school, high school. They all go out of town for college, you know. When they go back to college after summer, they come here, take 10, 15 pole bars to the airport. When they come back home, they don't go home first. They come to Redosa to get pole bars. Then they go home. In their early 30s, they just come by us. It's amazing. It's really funny.
Now, Don, you know, every city around the United States has a sandwich. Or every one of them has a Philadelphia. We're talking about the Philly steak sandwich or whatever. It doesn't matter. Every city has something they're famous for in a sandwich. But what sets New Orleans apart with the pole bar, you think?
I think just the ingredients and the taste. I really do. I mean, just the spices we use for one.
Yeah.
We just went to Boston on vacation about 4 weeks ago. It was great, but it wasn't New Orleans food.
Yeah.
It was edible food. We went in a one-inch steak. Joan and our sister had to have lobster. I don't eat lobster.
I
ordered me some grilled asparagus and a vodka on the rocks.
Now, you see, here's a Louisiana pole bar icon maker right here. He goes to Boston. What he eats, grilled asparagus and vodka on the rocks. He said, I'm not wasting my time on this.
Well, we have the sandwich, too. Grilled asparagus. Swiss cheese and bacon.
No need wasting good calories. What's your favorite po' boy?
My favorite po' boy is my Italian sausage with the olive salad mix and the melted provolone cheese.
Oh, man, I'm coming. I'm telling you, I'm coming.
That is my favorite.
Look, in the next five, are y'all open on Saturday?
We're on Saturdays, 11 to 5.
11 to 5. Michelle?
I'm putting him in the phone.
Michelle, we going in the phone. We going to eat lunch over there.
Listen. I always kid my customers. This is true. I got one slogan in life. The three keys. Quick, quality, and quantity.
Look.
But I said, don't ever quote me on this quick stuff because sometimes it's not quick.
Well, Don, look, we appreciate you taking the time to be with us today.
And look,
we really respect you so much for what the Redosta family has done. And we're going to have y'all on the website. Give us your address real fast.
249 Aris, A-R-I-S Avenue, Metairie, Louisiana, 7005.
We're gonna get you right there on the internet, and everybody can go to Facebook page, and you're gonna find Redosta. Don, thank you so much.
Chef, thank y'all, both of y'all. Thank y'all so much.
Okay.
It's a pleasure.
Bye bye, and we'll be back in a minute.
Life is easy for a cow until you're in the stew. Don't be a hamburger or a cheeseburger. Don't be taco meat. You're too good to eat. Cheeseburger. Don't be
you're too good to eat.
From a rock club to a favela rave, samba is still lurking everywhere in Rio de Janeiro. Join me for Samba Strikes Back as we follow samba adapting for the 21st century. Next time on Afropop Worldwide from PRI, Public Radio International.
Sunday night at 8 on KRVS.
This week is your chance to hear brand new music from artists debuting on the Thistle and Shamrock. Who will you discover? Maybe the Chair from Orkney.
Coming up Sunday evening at 6 here on KRVS.
Francomics avec Val. Bienvenue dans le monde francophone. C'est tous les jeudis à 9h sur KRVS, la radio Acadie.
Hi everyone, this is Pat Mitchell-Worley, and coming up next time on Beale Street Caravan, we've got Tommy Castro and Elvin Bishop on the legendary Rhythm and Blues Cruise. That plus our feature host Poppy Tooker continues her look at food and the blues. That's all coming up next time on Beale Street Caravan.
Saturday night at 11 here on KRVS.
T'as des misères à réveiller le dimanche matin? Mais allume la radio avec moi, Louis Michaud, tous les dimanches matins, 7h jusqu'à 9h. On va charrer en français, écouter de la musique en français et boire une petite tasse de café. Join me, Louis Michaud, if you have trouble waking up in the Sunday mornings. Just turn your radio to KRVS from 7 to 9 and hear me with Le Réveil, The Awakening en français.
You're listening to KRVS 88.7 FM, Lafayette, Lake Charles, and on the web at krvs.org. Find us on Facebook at KRVS Public Media.
Well, I almost decided to marry you, but that ain't the right thing for me to do. I don't love you, darling, can't you see? It's the toasted chicken sandwich and the big glass of sweet iced tea.
You don't get to be this healthy by eating light. They call this a table muscle where I'm from.
All those nights I dated you at your home.
At your home.
It wasn't 'cause I didn't want to be alone.
Be alone.
It's because of those great snacks you fixed for me.
Fixed for me.
Like a toasted chicken sandwich and a big glass of sweet iced tea. I was always sweet, I was never rude.
Never rude.
But before I'd kiss you, I'd ask for food.
Ask for food.
You buzz through the kitchen like a bumblebee.
Bumblebee.
And fix a toasted chicken sandwich and a big glass of sweet iced tea. Was the key to my heart.
Key to my heart.
Now I realize you're kind of smart.
Pretty bright, hot and joint lens.
There's only one way to marry me.
Marry me.
That's a toasted chicken sandwich and a big glass of sweet iced tea.
First thing I do is I take a
Hey, welcome back, everybody, to Stirring It Up. And what a great guest, Don. I mean, the Radastas are just absolutely fantastic. So and nice. The good news is that you don't have to go all the way into New Orleans. If you're coming from upstate or Baton Rouge area, you're going into New Orleans there, right in Metairie.
That's right.
In Metairie. You get off
right up Old Metairie Road.
Old Metairie Road. They're right there. Radastas, pole bars. You wonder. And we're going to have all that on the website. Mm-hmm. Now, what about Facebook in there? How's our Facebook? You can find us, y'all, at Facebook.com, right, Michelle?
Yep. Facebook.com/Stirring It Up Radio.
Stirring without the G.
That's right.
That's T-I-R-R. What's going on Facebook for us over there?
Stirring It Up Online. We got our Facebook page, and we encourage people to come on and be part of our friends group. We got over 600 friends now, so we're having quite a ripe discussion about what happens on the show. We're taking advice. We're taking questions from the public. And we're also discussing. We're having a little contest of sorts on our Facebook page.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we've got that new smokehouse out there.
Oh, man. I have not fired it up because I want to fire up the smokehouse when one of our smokehounds turns in their best smoked brisket or smoked ribs or smoked, country ribs. It doesn't matter to me. Leg of pork, whatever. Whole goat.
What do they get?
They get an invitation to the smokeout. That's
number
for sure.
One. Their name goes into history that they were the first people to cook in that smokehouse. That's number one. Second of all, photos on the website, right?
Oh yeah.
Third of all, recognition. Recognition right there on the big show. We're all over the internet on the show, so people are going to know that this person is famous.
Okay.
Anyway, so that's fine. What
I
else?
I might consider entering now.
Yeah, well, you enter. Anyway, y'all, Facebook.com/Stirring, S-T-I-R-R-I-N, Stirring It Up Radio. Well, y'all, today we're talking about sandwiches, and Michelle, I think sometimes it's the simplest and I guess the practical things that can change history, as you know. And it was at the turn of the 20th century that sandwiches were being made. And in fact, we just celebrated the 83rd birthday of this world-changing event. You know what I'm talking about?
In the food industry. And it really did, and it changed the world.
That's right. And that was the year that Otto Frederick Rawieder, who was a jeweler living in Chilcote, Missouri, who invented and was able to manufacture the first power-driven, multi-blade bread slicer. Absolutely. It was a big old machine, y'all. It was 6 feet long, 5 foot tall. The machine would push the loaves through a series of blades that were spinning around, and that would slice it, and then pins would hold the loaves together until it would come out the other end and could be wrapped. And when running at full capacity, this big old machine could slice 4,000 loaves, I guess, every hour. So, and the loaves had to be, you know, up to about 18 inches long, which later defined basically what a bag of bread looks like. Mm-hmm. And our good buddy Rawieder, you know, was a very wise man because he had already consulted, Michelle, with housewives in the neighborhood to see what thickness of bread they cut and sliced their own bread to and what was the most popular size. And they came up with slightly less than a half inch.
Hmm.
Oh, yeah, the women.
Smart man.
Women, that's right. He checked with all the women who were making sandwiches. At first, he couldn't get the bakers to try the machine so that they could slice their own bread. But fortunately, a baker by the name of Marion Frank Bench from the Chillicothe Baking Company, baking company, was ready to give the slicer a try, and it was a big success. And over the next several months, his bread sales at the Chillicothe Baking Company increased 2,000%.
Ooh, I bet you nobody, he was glad he took a risk.
Yeah, nobody wanted the food at slicing of bread anymore. Quickly, Rawieder found himself taking thousands of orders for this machine across the country. When the Depression hit, he was forced to sell his patent, but we know just how successful his product was. After all, when we want to talk about a brilliant idea that somebody else had instead of us, what do we always say? It's the greatest thing since sliced bread. Michelle, you were talking about a couple of recipes?
Well, yeah, it's really interesting to look back at some of these old cookbooks, and we were searching for sandwich recipes, and really there aren't that many. In fact, I have perhaps the first recipe for a sandwich found in a cookbook, and it's in Direction for Cookery, Elizabeth Leslie's book from 1840 that you mentioned earlier. And I have to read this to you because it's just interesting. Cut some thin slices of bread very neatly, having slightly buttered them. And if you choose, spread on a very little mustard. Have ready some very thin slices of cold boiled ham and lay one between two slices of bread. You may either roll them up or lay them flat on the plates. They are used at supper or at luncheon. You may substitute for the ham cold smoked tongue, shred or grated.
That was a lot of work to say. Put some meat between two pieces of bread, y'all, and have at it.
That's right. And, you know, our good buddy Lafcadio O'Hearn,
who
recorded some of the first recipes in the city of New Orleans.
Credited with recording the history of the beginning of Creole cookery.
That's right.
In New Orleans. Lafcadio O'Hearn.
In his La Creole Cuisine, he has a section called Sandwiches of Various Kinds for Picnics. And he says, homemade bread cuts better for sandwiches than baker's bread. So if you wish the sandwiches very nice, it is better to make a loaf at home. For bread and butter sandwiches, cut the bread very thin, spread it evenly with sweet butter, and lay the buttered slices together. Lay them in circles on a plate and put parsley on top of them. Sandwiches may be made with cheese sliced and placed between the buttered bread, or with hard-boiled eggs sliced or chopped and put between. The best are made with boiled smoked tongue, again, or ham, with French mustard spread over the butter.
You know, it's amazing that two writers mentioned mm-hmm. tongue in a sandwich mm-hmm. because
yeah.
even though we're
smoked tongue,
even though we're not a big culture here in Louisiana of the tongue, mm-hmm. Most of the immigrants that did come over favored tongue, and especially in sandwiches. So you find a lot of the French, and certainly find a lot of the Jewish communities and all mm-hmm. love the tongue sandwiches. But mm-hmm. even in our culinary school at Nickel State, whenever we do tongue, because we do cook it from time to time, all the students kind of back up against the wall when it's one of the, I mean, best known delicacies
yeah.
In the world is the mm-hmm. tongue and the smoked tongue sandwiches. But and boy, you can see people, friends come in from out of state. And you go to a sandwich shop and they say, I think I'll get a tongue sandwich. I say, I think you won't. Not here. Anyway, what about the special sauces that we dress sandwiches with or the breads? I remember that Savoir magazine in that issue listed about 20 different breads. But yet at the same time, what about the sauces like the mayo and mustard that everybody has to have on a sandwich or barbecue or honey mustard or one of my favorite new South American influences, the chimichurris and the pestos, the fresh greens that are mashed or cut with olive oils to create some nice coatings. And, of course, also the vegetable toppings like tomatoes and lettuce and onions and garlic and even French fries on one of my favorite sandwiches in Philadelphia. And then there's the salad sandwiches he mentioned at Rodasta's a minute ago, the egg salad and the chicken salad and the tuna salad. All of those are really unbelievable sandwiches. And think about all the breads, too. When you think of the black breads, the Kaiser rolls, the lobster rolls, the pumpernickels, the pitas, the sodas, the focaccias, you keep on the English muffins, the sesame seeded buns, the steamed buns. I mean, we can just keep the po' boy bread, the muffalata breads, just on and on and on.
Look at this. Isn't this beautiful? They could have made this into a poster.
Well, if this was a television show,
maybe we could talk about it. I'm looking at Savoir magazine, but look at it. It's beautiful, this whole spread of the different breads that you were just talking about and a whole spread of all the different condiments. And some of them are just shocking, a little shocking to me because I never put, you know, blueberries on a sandwich.
Well, you never had a Creole cream cheese on a bun with blueberries on it.
No, I have not.
A dash of black pepper.
Got to do it.
One of my favorite.
One of your
one of my favorite dinner dishes. Uh-huh.
Huh.
Absolutely. What about my favorite sandwich that I invented? This is my pork brats, pork comma brats, and shrimp burger.
Hmm.
With caramelized onion relish.
That sounds good on its own.
Well, if people are tired of those old, crazy, boring sandwiches, I mean, this recipe is one that I created, and I'll tell you how I did it. I had some brats in the refrigerator, and I had some pork.
Uh-huh.
And I was just dying of something to eat one day, and I said, you know what, I don't normally make a hamburger with ground pork, but I have the brats right here, and maybe I'll just go ahead and mix all of those together. And then, lo and behold, I had about a half a cup of shrimp left in there. I said, I'm going to throw that in my little sandwich, too. And I mixed all the ground meat and the ground pork and the beef. So anyway, and it came.
Did you chop up those shrimp?
I chopped them up, yeah. I chopped them up just like grinding the thing. And anyway, so it was really great. And you can put a little cheese on it, too. So anyway, for the burger, y'all, a pound of ground pork. One pack of the Johnsonville brats. I love the Johnsonville brats. And you can get the spicy brats as well. And then a half a pound of 70-90 count shrimp peeled and deveined, a half a pound. And you're going to have one 7.5-ounce can of the chipotle pepper and adobo sauce, which absolutely is important in this sandwich, the adobo sauce with the chipotles. And then you're going to have a tablespoon of the minced garlic, salt and pepper, and granulated garlic to taste. And what you're going to do is to take a bowl and you're going to throw the ground pork. Well, you're going to heat your pit up first, you know, according to the manufacturer's directions. Then you're going to take the ground pork and put it into the bowl, and you can put the shrimp in the Cuisinart and chop that around a little bit, and you know, kind of don't puree it, just chop it coarsely. So you can save a couple even whole pieces of shrimp if you want to. They look good in the burger. But throw the ground shrimp in with the ground pork, and then you're going to remove the skin from the brats, and you're going to break up the sausages, and you're going to put them in and just kind of coarsely chop all of that together with the side of a metal spoon. You don't want to work it too much with your fingers because you just extrude that protein and you make the sandwich tough. You make the meat tough. So use the side of your spoon. Just chop it and chop it and chop it until all that meat just kind of resembles a ground meat. So you got the pork, the brats, and the shrimp all well mixed together right there. Into that, I'm going to take that mixture of the adobo. You get it in a little can in the ethnic section of the store, the chipotle in adobo sauce. And you're going to take three of those chipotle peppers out of the sauce that when you open the can and chop them real fine. And then about a tablespoon of that adobo sauce. Now, this is nice and hot and spicy and fully flavored, just beautifully flavored. And you're going to add that to the mix. Then you're going to add the minced garlic that I talked about. You're going to season with salt, pepper, granulated garlic, and you're going to roll them beautifully into some nice burger patties. And just absolutely fantastic. And then you're going to get them ready to go on to, and you're going to do them about 3/4 inch thick. And then to make the relish that you have, you're going to go ahead and you're going to put into a skillet the caramelized, you're going to take two, I like the red onions, and you're going to slice them very, very thin into about eighth of an inch rings, about a quarter cup of melted butter, and about 2 tablespoons of olive oil. You're going to put that in a skillet with the onions, and you're going to get that butter and olive oil nice and hot, and you're going to start to saute the onions until they wilt. And once they wilt, you're going to put a tablespoon of or two of Steen's cane syrup to sweeten it up, and just continue to cook it on a lower heat so they don't burn. You want to wilt them all the way down into a soft relish, but not brown, and you know they're going to brown naturally with the beer. After that, you're going to put 1 12-ounce bottle of Abita amber beer in it, and you're going to reduce that beer all the way out just until the onions are full flavor with the beer and the syrup. Salt and pepper to taste. Throw those burgers on the pit. Go ahead and toast your buns a little bit, and go your lettuce, tomatoes. You put that meat on top. You put a spoon of that wonderful, wonderful caramelized onion relish with the beer and cane syrup. Oh, you locked the screen door, y'all. Locked the screen door. It's a wonderful dish. The recipe will be on our website, jfalls.com. Just go to the radio show, starting it up. And, y'all, make one of these burgers, please, and eat the sandwiches.